Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 2, the Book of the Traveller of the Worlds, Canto 7, The Descent into Night. In our reading, we read as far as the break on page 208, and then we went back last week and we had a closer look at the whole of the first section, and we stopped on page 205 at the break. King Aswapati is exploring the worlds of life. We started with Canto 3, where he saw first an image of life as we know it, contradictory, varied, unreliable. But then Sri Aurobindo told us that this life goddess, this life principle, pure and bright from the timeless, was her birth. Eternal bliss is her native home. And Aswapati was given a glimpse, or even quite a comprehensive overview, of those griefless worlds. So if the origin of life is griefless and full of bliss, how has it come to be this mixed life that we know, which seems to thrive on the opposites of pleasure and pain? And he showed us how in the very beginning of things, and the earth was a purely material creation, sea and sky and stone, those young gods who were imprisoned in that material form were yearning for something else, the possibility of sensation, of emotion, of delight. And in answer to that intense aspiration, the life goddess poured all her beauty and her bliss down on this material creation, hoping to fill a fair new world with joy. And she did succeed in bringing the life principle into matter, but it was swallowed up by the dark inertia of matter and death. This seems to be a recurrent process in evolution. There's an established level. Within it arises an aspiration of increasing intensity for something more, vaster, truer, brighter. And in response to the aspiration, a higher principle comes down. We will see this happening again. And so in this case, it's the principle of life coming down into matter and getting swallowed up. The mother has explained to Huta how on February 29th, 1956, after the meditation in the playground, during the concentration, she had this vision of herself standing in front of a vast golden door, and she was told, "The time has come." And she lifted up a huge hammer and struck the door, and the door opened, and all the supramental forces poured out and poured down like a great golden river. And she saw them being swallowed up into dark blue waves of unconsciousness. But she said, "But it is there now. Now that power is there in matter, and it will evolve. A new world is born." She was quite sure about it. So a similar process has happened with life. And in Canto 4, Sri Aurobindo showed us three levels of this emerging life. Life very, very much involved in matter, emerging with difficulty in the form of tiny, short-lived beings who were there for a moment and gone again. But then gradually, the life power got more established, more able to express itself in material forms, and he showed us the animal creation developing in its many, many different forms. And at the end of Canto 4, we saw the first emergence of some kind of physical mind. He didn't at that point lead us towards the higher levels of mind. That will happen. We will come to it later. Instead, he showed us Aswapati wanting to find out about the powers that are behind this life force. And so we read about the kingdoms and the godheads of the little mind, the godheads, all the little beings invisible to us who are manipulating the life forms. And having seen that, he moved on to the kingdoms of the greater life. It's a much more developed expression of the higher possibilities of life, reaches almost divine levels. And that realm, he says, inspires us with our greater hopes, our ideals, our higher creativity. But after exploring all that and all these higher possibilities of life, King Aswapati realized that this is a closed sphere. There doesn't seem to be any escape from this repetitive pattern of despite all the variety of life, it's repetitive, there's something limited, that newness. And above all, what he was searching for is the power which can really make life on earth a divine life. That was missing altogether. So he is guided to go back to the very roots of life and find out where this distortion has come in. For that, he undertakes this descent into the night. So that's where we are reading now. We are on page 205, no, yes, 205 at the break. I maybe read a passage just from page 204. I'm starting to read on line 76. Life looked at him with changed and somber eyes. Her beauty he saw, and the yearning heart in things that with a little happiness is content, answering to a small ray of truth or love. He saw her gold sunlight and her far blue sky, her green of leaves and hue and scent of flowers, and the charm of children and the love of friends and the beauty of women and kindly hearts of men, but saw too the dreadful powers that drive her moods and the anguish she has strewn upon her ways. Fate waiting on the unseen steps of men, and her evil and sorrow and last gift of death. He wants to discover why it is like this. And so he's going down into the dark depths. Fanny, would you read? Page 205 at the break. As from a womb obscure.
As from a womb obscure, he so emerged the body and visage of a dark unseen, hidden behind the fair outside of life. Its dangerous commerce is our suffering's cause. Its breath is a subtle poison in men's hearts. All evil starts from that ambiguous face, a pet now, a common air. The world grew full of menacing energies. And wherever turned for help or hope his eyes, he, field and house, in street and camp and mart, he met the prole and still see come and go, down disquieting bodied influences, a march of goddess figures dark and late, along the air, with grandiose unease, appalling footsteps through invisible leaves, shapes that were threats invaded the dream light, and ominous things passed him on the road, whose very gaze was a calamity, a charmless sweetness, sudden and formidable, faces that raised unbelievably. And I approached him armed with beauty like a snare, but hid a fatal meaning in each line, and could in a moment dangerously change. But he alone discerned that screen attack, a veil upon the inner vision lay, a force was there that All was blind, yet thought itself the truth. All were beset, but knew not of the siege, for none could see the authors of their fall.
As Swapati is experiencing this in the inner worlds, in the inner subtle worlds, but there are times and places when these armed, disquieting influences take control of our outer world. Dreadful things happen. All dreadful periods of history are dominated by these dark forces from behind. And human beings don't see, they don't know where this is coming from. Only perhaps a few people may have dreams or visions that give an indication of something, but they feel powerless to do anything about it. These are such strong powers hidden behind the fair outsides of life. At first we don't notice them, but if their influence persists, then even the outer expressions of life have become terrifying. Beings passed him on the road whose very gaze was a calamity. This may happen to people. They talk about the evil eye, no?
When I think all this is very sad, it depresses me.
It's extremely depressing, yes. We read about this sardonic rictus on God's face, no? Have we read about that yet? The lines that you showed this morning, no? And there's a very poignant passage in the agenda when the mother explains about the effect that these passages had on her, no? How disturbing it was. And she has made that drawing, that terrible drawing, and underneath she has written, "Falsehood is the suffering of the Lord." And then she has said she realized when she saw that, when she experienced that, that the cure must be joy. If we can cling to the divine joy and feel that, it can change. Divine joy and love are the only powers that are strong enough to combat this evil at the root of life. Here we are blessed by their protection. We can always call on that. It is with us all the time. It's protecting us from these dreadful experiences. But there are times and places on the earth when these forces predominate. And what Aswapati was looking for is the power which can change all that, can just dispel all this, so that the earth no longer has to suffer in this way, that human beings no longer have to suffer these dark influences.
Isn't that our choice?
It depends, of course, on our choice, but our choice is not always enough. We need the divine power and grace. Sometimes, while keeping the inner choice, all we can do is keep quiet and out of notice, inconspicuous, quietly endure until the balance of forces change. So that's when we can call for protection of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Is this passage clear? Would anybody like to ask anything?
Is duality essential to this level?
Yes, or can't say it's essential, but it's established, no? At our present state of evolution, there's this, on the life level, there's this predominance of duality and thus of the possibility of error, falsehood, suffering, evil even. And there seem to be beings in the subtle worlds who delight in all that. And if they can get hold of human beings and play with them and get them on their side, sometimes a whole country or a whole civilization is afflicted with their influence. So it's something Sri Aurobindo's telling us about this so that we can be on our guard against those influences, aware of them, and ask for protection.
So we start with a thought, and if we avoid that thought, then it doesn't attack us.
I think more than thought, of course it affects the thought, but more than thought is a feeling. This is on the vital level, the life level. Of course, the thought affected, and then the actions. And people are blind, no? A veil upon the inner vision, not only the outer vision. The inner vision lay. A force was there that hid its dreadful steps. All were beset. Everybody was under attack. But nobody knew anything about that. They didn't realize that they're under attack and that they have to be protecting themselves, because nobody could see the source, the authors of their fall. That's what Aswapati sees, that this in that world, that influence is there everywhere on that level of life which he's entering now. He's only just beginning to enter it. It gets worse and worse. Sorry?
It's not there in the practical human life.
Of course, that's what I'm saying, that it has its effect. I was born into a world which was under the threat of fascism, and I remember as a small child being very aware of this dark pressure. It's an atmosphere which I was born into, and I was aware of it, and I recognize it when I see it or when I experience it. Maybe others here are of a similar age. And then we can see that really it's only the divine grace that can save us. Sri Aurobindo put all his force against saving the earth from this terrible menace. What he's writing about here, he knows about in detail because he's had to battle it. So let's read on Varadarajan. Would you read, please? Line 148.
Aware of Anzara's wisdom, still he said, because the sea and violence of his strength, he followed the track of being tremendous, returning to the night for his decay, that he reached and built and wound the man. They're all put in there, but none. For long. It was a no man's land of India, a crowded neighborhood with a one home, a borderland between the world there and reality was never small. It was a space where nothing could be true, for nothing was what it had claimed to be. A high appearance wrapped its initial quality, yet nothing would answer its own vision. Even to itself,
thank you. Where is this strength coming from? Aswapati is aware of some dark wisdom still withheld. He's not able to discern it. But that is the seal and warrant of this strength. There's something, some power behind. So he wants to trace that back to its origin. He followed the track of dim, tremendous steps returning to the night from which they came. So then he comes into this no man's land. It's not ruled by any particular power. Anybody can enter there, but nobody can stay there for long. A borderland between the world and hell, the home of evil. Unreality is the lord of nature there. It was a space where nothing could be true, for nothing was what it had claimed to be. A high appearance wrapped a specious void. Specious means misleading, an emptiness actually. Yet nothing would confess its own pretense, even to itself. So there's a basic insincerity ruling there. A vast deception was the law of things. Only by that deception they could live. Will you read, please? Sir?
Only by the deception, an unsubstantial medium granted a falsehood of the form is nature to, and made them seem a while to be and live.
Live.
A borrowed magic drew them from the void. They took a shape and stuff that was not theirs, and showed a color that they could not keep. Mirrors to a phantom can see.
Phantasm, you can't see. Would you like Eugen to go on?
Yeah, okay.
mirrors to a phantasm of reality. Yes, Eugen.
Each rainbow brilliance was a splendid light, the beauty unreal grace, the glamour face. Nothing could be relied on to read. Joy nurtured tears and good and evil grew, but never out of evil one plucked good. Love ended early in hate, delight killed with pain. Truth into falsity grew and death grew blind. The power that laughed at the mischiefs of the world, an irony that joined the world's contrary and flung them into each other's arms to strive, put a sardonic rictus on God's face. Aloof, its ink entered everywhere and left a cloven hoof mark on the breast, a twisted heart and a strange somber smile.
Thank you. So there's a power that's enjoying all this. Power that laughed at the mischiefs of the world. An irony. Irony is a kind of contradictory, paradoxical humor. So it's as if there's a sense of irony that has taken all the world's contraries, all its opposites, brought them together just to enjoy seeing them fight, flung them into each other's arms to strive. So it's as if the face of God, the face of the ruler, the Lord, has put on this terrible sardonic smile, a smile that is not a smile. A rictus is just a spasm of the muscles of the face. No? And this rictus puts such an ugly expression, mocking at all the suffering, all the contradictions, all the mischief.
I lost my face after the war.
Yes, yes. Why, how could it be allowed to be?
Yeah. This
has been possible. Yes. He needs our help to prevent it. In this evolutionary world, all we souls have come to be part of this adventure of unconsciousness, the soul forgetting who and what it is, and slowly climbing up the ladder, the golden ladder, back to full consciousness. And on the way, it has to pass through this stage. There's a very interesting chapter in the Life Divine where Sri Aurobindo deals with this, the origin and remedy of evil, falsehood, suffering. And it seems that it is a necessary part of our soul's evolution to have to face these dark realities. At least it's like that now, until humanity as a whole reaches a level of consciousness that just will no longer allow all this to happen. And so all the great messengers who come, they're trying to give us this warning and this strength and this protection. And if we're willing to collaborate with them, then we get the protection and the strength. But it may be necessary for the soul to go through this ordeal. As we see in Savitri, that she is born to save, and yet because of the state of humanity, this ordeal is imposed on her. She has to suffer the human lot and face grief and evil and suffering on her road. So Mother says, yes, a God who would deliberately do that to us, she can't believe in him. No, she can't. She has no respect for such a being. No. Who would deliberately do it. Sri Aurobindo says we have to remember, who is it in us who is experiencing all? It's the traveler in time. It's the Lord himself in human form who passes through all this. And only his strength can bear it, really. It's not an explanation. Anyway, Asvapati is deliberately going through these experiences to find out what is the power, what is the principle that can change it. And he does find it out at the end of Canto 8, but that's quite a few pages ahead, quite a few Sundays. Yes, it's in the end of Canto 8. I'm not going to jump ahead and read it, but it's on page 231, line 411. He saw the secret key of nature's change.
Why does he talk about wisdom there?
Here it speaks of a dark wisdom, no? Sorry, I've lost the page now. Here, page 206. He's aware of some dark wisdom that is the seal and warrant, which puts the sanction on this strength. So he refers to this power several times at the end of Canto 3, for example, page 130. This is about the fall of life, line 518. The secret will that robes itself with night and offers to spirit the ordeal of the flesh imposed a mystic mask of death and pain. And there's a passage in Canto 2. Yes, on page 17, line 219, or a little higher, 215. This is about the one who's dealing with Savitri. One dealt with her who meets the burdened great, assigner of the ordeal and the path, who chooses in this holocaust of the soul death, fall, and sorrow as the spirit's goads, the dubious Godhead with his torch of pain lit up the chasm of the unfinished world and called her to fill with her vast self the abyss. August and pitiless in his calm outlook, heightening the eternal's dreadful strategy, he measured the difficulty with the might and dug more deep the gulf that all must cross. Assailing her divinest elements, he made her heart kin to the striving human heart and forced her strength to its appointed road. She has come to wrestle with the shadow, and he has made it more difficult for her. In a way, we all have to wrestle with the shadow at some point in our lives. So Amar Kiran asked Sri Aurobindo, who is this power? Who is this one who assigns the ordeal and the path? And he made several suggestions. Is it love? Is it pain? Is it time? Who is it? Sri Aurobindo said, I deliberately haven't put any label on it. But you can call him the Lord of Evolution, if you like. It's this opposition which brings our inner strength and forces us to find the way out, which is only up. There's no other way out. One has to go up. So Mother has told a similar story about the paradise, the Garden of Eden. There's this serpent there who comes and spoils everything, gives Eve the apple, and so on. And she says, some people say this is the force of evolution, this multicolored serpent driving things always onward and upward. So we also have to pass through this ordeal. We've chosen to read Savitri, and we have to go through this. When it came to making the paintings, Mother told Huta, she said, I've been through this world and I've faced all these difficulties and I don't want to make any images to show to people. So there are no paintings of Canto 8. But of Canto 7 there are still some. Irony can be used in quite a good way also to make contradictions clear. Sri Aurobindo occasionally uses irony as part of his humorous armory. But yes, here it is negative. It's just mean. Yes.
I was surprised by the painting of that
terrible mask.
It seems such a sad looking face and not kind of a mocking
No.
You know, smiling.
No, she said that is the image that she saw. And then what she wrote, she has herself written underneath. Falsehood is the sorrow of the Lord.
And then other work which came into my mind is the Schadenfreude. That was in English
actually.
Yeah, Schadenfreude. It's a German word, but it
appears in the English dictionary.
Yeah, it appeared in the English dictionary.
It's delight in damage, no?
I think everybody has that experience.
Mm. Of seeing bad things happening and thinking, oh good, they got their just desserts, no? Something like that.
Yeah. But when you see it in this context, yeah. I'm sorry, it's quite shocking.
Yeah.
But don't it actually means you're terribly upset, but you still show a grin, a victor's grin.
No, it can be mean also, sardonic. Oh, you think life is beautiful, you should know better. Sardonic. It's I think it was a school of Greek philosophers, no? Or the cynics. Yeah. Mm. So let's go on a little further. So we stopped at mocked at the sinister comedy of life. A twisted heart and a strange, somber smile mocked at the sinister comedy of life. Mihong, would you read on, please?
Announcing the advent of a perilous form, an ominous tread softened its dire footfall. Footfall, then none might understand or be on guard. None heard until a dreadful grasp was closed, or else all augured a divine approach. An air of purpose felt a heavenly hope, listened for a gospel, watched the rose flower. Thing was visible, but cloaked in light. It seemed a helping angel from the skies. He armed untruth with the scripture and the law. He deceived with the wisdom, with the virtue, slew the soul, prediction, by the heavenward path, a lavish sense, he gave of power and joy. And when arose the warning from within, he reassured the ear with the dulcet tones, or took the mind captive in its own net. This rigorous logic made the false seem true. Amazing, he elect with the holy law. He spoke with the very voice of God.
Let's pause there. He armed untruth with scripture and the law. So these things have happened in human history. But this is all the work of subtle powers, dark power, and they act in such a way that human beings can't be aware. And it may happen that there's this appearance which gives a great hope. Everything augurs, everything points to a divine approach. There's an air of prophecy is felt, a heavenly hope. Oh, at last, everything is going to be set right. People are listening for a gospel, watching for a new star. The fiend, the devil, is there. He's visible, but he's cloaked in light. He seemed a helping angel from the sky. And then he gives all these specious words. He armed untruth with scripture and the law, capital S and capital L. He deceived with wisdom, with virtue, slew the soul, destroyed the soul, and led to perdition, to damnation, by the heavenward path. People think they're on the road to heaven. He's leading them down. He gives a lavish sense of power and joy. Oh, wonderful, we are on the right side. No? And when the warning comes from the soul within, that dark power reassures the ear with dulcet tones, sweet musical tones. Or he catches the mind in its own net with his rigorous logic, which makes the false seem true. He bewilders the elect, the chosen ones, or the ones who believe that they are the chosen ones. No? He repeats to them the holy law, the holy learning, the words from the Bible. He makes himself sound like the very mouthpiece of God. In that way, it's easy for him to mislead. This is a world of falsehood.
How can we protect from this?
Pray for protection. Nothing else to be done. Rely on the divine grace. But the important thing is to know that you're under attack. The soul will give you the warning, then you have to listen to it.
This line that I need, I think, needs some explanation.
Yes.
That he slew virtue, the soul of the virtue also. Real virtue also is bad.
I think we talked about it the other day, no? If you're so proud of your virtue.
If you're not proud, it's a real virtue in you, and still it slews.
Well, of course, there's this problem with the duality. You know, if we make this duality between virtue and sin, we can get caught in that net.
Then how do you find the real voice against that
Yes. The first necessity is to find out who you really are beyond all the appearances. That's what Mother has told us. No? That our center, she says, there's this being, our true being, who should become the acting center of our life. And then we'll hear the warning voice if it comes. And there'll be a wonderful protection and a guidance, very precise guidance. One has to be so careful. In some stories, in some analogies, it's spoken of as following a silver thread. You know, like Theseus in the labyrinth, he had to hold onto the thread and find the way out. It's like that. You can't go an inch this way or that way. You just have to follow that thread exactly where it's leading you, and it will bring you out. But first you have to find it, you know, the golden key. So all the help is there for everybody who sincerely undertakes that search. And some of the help may involve ordeals that you have to pass through.
What is the name of the Greek story with the thread?
Theseus, the story of Theseus and the labyrinth, the king of Crete, King Minos, he had this monster, it was a bull with the face of a human being, the Minotaur. Yeah. And of course there's a whole, like these ancient stories, there's a whole chain of stories that goes before it, how come he had this Minotaur to deal with. Anyway, he called a great engineer, who is mentioned several times in the poem, Daedalus, to design a labyrinth. So the Minotaur was inside and couldn't find his way out. And if he wanted to get rid of anybody, the king would put them in there with the Minotaur so that they couldn't find their way out. But the king's daughter saw Theseus and was sorry for him, so she gave him a thread that he could fasten to a rock before he went in, and then he could go in, and he killed the Minotaur, and then he could find his way out following the thread. It comes in some fairy stories also, this magic thread that shows you the way. Ariadne. And then he just abandoned her. She'd saved him. He carried her off to a desert island and left her there. So the Greeks knew all kinds of things. No? So we stopped at, he spoke as with the very voice of God. Paula.
The air was full of treachery and ruse. Truth speaking was a stratagem in that place. Ambush lurked in a smile, and peril made safety its cover, trust its entry gate. Falsehood came laughing with the eyes of truth. Each friend might turn an enemy or spy. The hand one clasped and sleeved a dagger's stab, and an embrace could be doom's iron cage. Agony and danger stalked their trembling prey, and softly spoke as to a timid friend. Attack sprang suddenly, vehement and unseen. Fear leaped upon the heart at every turn and cried out with an anguish dreadful voice. It called for one to save, but none came near. All warily walked, for death was ever close. Yet caution seemed a vain expense of care, for all that guarded proved a deadly net. And when After long suspense, salvation came and brought a glad relief, disarming strength. It served as a smiling passage to worse fate. There was no truce and no safe place to rest. One dared not slumber or put off one's arms in a world of battle and surprise. All who were there lived for themselves alone. All warred against all, but with a common hate turned on the mind that sought some higher good. Truth was exiled, lest she should dare to speak and hurt the heart of darkness with her light, or bring her pride of knowledge to blaspheme the settled anarchy of established things.
Thank you. So I think we've got the picture. Anybody got anything special they would like to ask? I think we could read the next section. We stopped our reading there, no? Yes, so we could just continue reading. Patty, would you go after the break?
Then the scene changed, but kept its dreadful core. Altering its form, the life remained the same. A capital was there without a state. It had no ruler, only groups that strove. She saw a city of ancient ignorance, founded upon a soil that knew not light. There, each in his own darkness, walked alone. Only they agreed to differ in evil's paths, to live in their own way for their own selves, or to enforce a common lie and wrong. There, ego was lord upon his peacock seat, and falsehood set by him, his mate and queen. The world turned to them as heaven to truth and God. Injustice, justified by firm decrees, the sovereign weights of error's legalized trade, but all the weights were false and none the same. Ever she watched with her balance and the sword, lest any sacrilegious word expose the sanctified formulas of her old misrule. In high professions, wrapped self-will walked wide, and license stalked, prating of order and right. There was no altar raised to liberty. True freedom was abhorred and hunted down. Harmony and tolerance nowhere could be seen. Each group proclaimed its dire and naked law.
Thank you. Do you like to read? Do you like to read? A frame of ethics.
A frame of ethics, not with spiritual rules. On a theory passionately believed and praised, a table seen of high heaven's sacred code, a formal practice mailed and iron shod, gave to a rule and ruthless warrior kind, drawn from the savage burrows of the earth, proud stern, voice of harsh nobility, a civic posture rigid and formidable, but all their private acts beneath the pose. Power and utility were their truth and right. An evil rapacity clawed in coveted good. Beaks pickled and talons tore all weaker prey. In their sweet secrecy of pleasant sins, nature they obeyed and not a moralist god. Inconscient traitors in bundles of contraries, they did what in others they would persecute. With their eyes looked upon their fellow vice, and indignation flamed a virtuous wrath. Oblivious of their own deep-hit offense, mob-like they stoned a neighbor caught in sin.
Thank you. Aaron. You're passing? Turia.
I'm passing to a
my. Okay, Manoha.
A pragmatist judge within passive fast force degree poses worst negligence on equity space.
Equity.
Equity space. Reason ill actions just, sanctioned the stain of the merchant ego's interest and desire. thus was a balance kept. The world could be a zealot fervor, push their ruthless tongues. All faith, not theirs, bled scourge as heresy. They questioned, captive, tortured, burned or smoked, and forced the soul to abandon life or die. Amid her clashing creeds of warring sects, religion sat upon a blood-stained throne. 100 tyrants oppressed and slew and founded unity upon fraud and force. Only what seemed was prized as real there. The idea was a cynic ridiculous but hooted by the crowd, mocked by enlightened wits. Spiritual seeking wandered outcasted. A dreamer's self-deceiving web of thought, or mad chimera deemed or hypocrites fade. Its passionate instinct trailed through minds obscure, lost in the circuits of the ignorance. The lie was there, the truth and truth alive.
Thank you. Jerry?
Here is a traveler on the upward way, on daring hills, kingdoms,
winds
the heavenly route, horse or pass slowly through that perilous space. Prayer upon his lips and the great name, if probes not all discernments keen spear great, he might stumble into falsity's endless net. Over his shoulder, often he must look back, like one who feels not his neck and endless breath, else stealing up behind a treacherous blow, my prostrate cast and pinned to unholy soil, pierced to his back by evil's poisoned stake. So might I fall on eternal rope, forfeiting the spirit's lonely chance in time, and no news of him reached the waiting gods, marked missing in the register of souls. His name index of a failing hope, position of a dead remembered star. Only you are safe who kept the gold in their hearts, courage their armor, faith their sword, they must walk. The hand ready to smite, the eye to scout, casting a javelin regard in front, heroes and soldiers, the army of night. Hardly even so, the grisly danger passed, released into a calmer, purer air. They dared at length to breathe and smile once more. Once more, they moved beneath a wicked sun. No help made move, the spirit still and power. This no man's land he passed without a day. Him the heights missed, him the abyss desired. None stood across his way, no voice forbade, for swift and easy was the downward path. And now, was the night, was turned his face.
We've got three more sections to read, but we'll stop there for today.
Thanks to Sherpindo.